Welcome to ABL Duos.
This edition of ABL Duos is different. In 30 minutes, you are going to hear from three outstanding Black business leaders in Atlanta, Georgia. One is Christopher Womack. He is Chair, President, and Chief Executive Officer of Georgia Power. Its parent company, a utility company that posted assets of more than $53 billion in 2022. You'll also hear from Ernest Greer. He is co-president of an equally impressive privately held company, Greenberg Traurig. It's an international law firm with 45 locations in the United States, Europe, the Mideast, Latin America, and Asia. Greenberg Traurig employs more than 2,060 attorneys around the world. But in the next minute or so, this program is going to tell you more about the organization creating this podcast series. The Atlanta Business League is the last thriving chapter of the first business organization created for African Americans. It was started by the legendary author, educator, and leader Dr. Booker T. Washington in 1900. United States President Theodore Roosevelt attended the inaugural convention in Boston, Massachusetts. At one time, the National Negro Business League had 320 chapters. They represented all industries from bankers to farmers, physicians to laundresses. However, its most important legacy was training Black business owners so they had the skills necessary to run their companies. However, Atlanta Business League also has a unique history associated with its name. It started out as the Atlanta Colored Business League and may have founded a chapter as early as 1901. Most NNBL chapters dissipated during the stock market crash of 1929. Atlanta remained strong, and in 1937, its executive chair, Jesse Blayton, actually revived the National Business League for a few years. By the 1950s, however, Atlanta's chapters seemed to stand alone. It brought women and iconic leaders such as Jesse Hill and Herman Russell into leadership. It continued to share skills and uplift Black business owners, entrepreneurs, and professionals. Blayton was the first Black certified public accountant for the state of Georgia. He taught financial literacy skills to ABL members long before these types of classes became available to most people. So, now that you know more about the Atlanta Business League, you understand why their official 90th anniversary, which started when they were renamed as the Atlanta Business League, is such an important milestone. It's also the reason why so many outstanding, successful Black business professionals are proud to be members of this organization. You're about to meet another one. Albert G. Edwards is the founder of Corporate Environmental Risk Management, a nationally award-winning premier firm of engineers, scientists, planners, and surveyors. It's commonly known as CIRM. Al chaired the ABL from 2020 through 2022, and he conducts the interviews for today's episode. What you are going to hear are actually two pre-recorded sessions with men who earned the title of the Herman J. Russell Chief Executive Officer of the Year. Ernest Greer of Greenberg Traurig had the honor in 2021. You'll hear Al's conversation with him right after this.
This is a part of the Telling Our Story Atlanta Business League podcast series. Here's Marty Covington.
This is a special episode of ABL Duos. You're about to hear former Atlanta Business League Chair Albert Edwards of CIRM interview CEO of the Year Ernest Greer of Greenberg Traurig. This was recorded in 2021.
Some of you know that I attended Mississippi Valley. It's in Itabena, Mississippi. I joke and say that the mosquito is the state bird over there. And I was a football major, got a minor in engineering, believe it or not. And our legendary coach was harsh and a taskmaster, but he recruited me at the fatherhood level. Archie the Gunslinger Cooley. As a matter of fact, in our first meeting, first group meeting, I was a freshman, and Coach Cooley announced, he said, you know, you get your education because I'm going to get my football. And so I asked my homeboy, I said, what's Coach Cooley talking about? He said, well, just, you know, after the second week of class, you'll know exactly what he's talking about. And, you know, I had one teammate. I was a defensive back, and I had this one teammate who got lucky. This was during the 80s. Somehow he managed to win three Super Bowls, was a Super Bowl MVP, two-time Offensive Player of the Year. This guy by the name of Jerry Rice. So, and I was the starting corner, so if he looked that good, that meant someone had to look bad, right? So that made us get to class. So our Herman J. Russell CEO of the Year also played football in college, but was also a state champion in high school and hit over 500 in baseball. And I had a chance to sit and chat with him about how the athletic experience affected his collegiate choices. Here we are.
Now, Ernest, you were a football player, high school state champion, played in college. How did athletics and football shape who you are, and what was your vision as a player?
You know, when you're doing athletics, at least when I was doing it, you never really think about the value proposition. What you're looking at is the competitive nature of it. You're looking at winning, and you're looking at being able to, feel accomplished. And as a youngster, I played football from the point that I was 6 years old, and I happened to play on very successful junior football league teams. Mm-hmm. And in fact, my parents drove me about 30, 40 minutes every day to go into the inner city to play in the inner city. But today, I see it as being very, very important to my competitive nature and also my philosophy on winning. That winning is important. And every day I wake up, I'm focused on winning. But I also see it in terms of the development of people.
That's right.
You know, I see my friend Steve Atwater, who is going into the Hall of Fame on August 6th, who I played with for 7 years, and then we played against each other in high school. And I will tell you, Steve Atwater at the time was a tackle on the line.
Really?
And then as he got older, he went to high school, and he was a defensive back. As well as a quarterback. And so there was coaches who sat there to develop Steve and develop others. And so when you look at a corporation, you know, development is so key to it. And so all of that brings together the concept of winning and the concept of developing people and the concept of that people play certain roles to get to the championship and to win that championship. And you have to have people accept the fact that that is their role, that is their highest value. So the coaching aspect of athletics is very near and dear to me as my role as co-president at Greenberg Traurig in terms of the coaching of our team.
You grew up in a suburb of St. Louis. Mm-hmm. I used to think of St. Louis as the home of the house party.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you make it to Atlanta?
I ended up coming to Atlanta because I met my wife on the first day of undergrad, her first day of undergrad. She was a student at Wellesley College. I was up at Harvard doing dorm crew. Dorm crew is a work-study program where you clean up dorms. And let me tell you something. If you can avoid that, avoid it. Because when people party on the weekends, the remains are left.
It's a mess.
And that was my job. But so I went in early, about 3 weeks early, 2 weeks early. And I went out there and I met my wife at that party. Her first day, 3 days for the start of mine. And we dated pretty much throughout college. And she just happened to move to St. Louis after work. I mean, after college, that's the only place she got a job. And we joined each other eventually at Northwestern. She was in the business school. I was in the law school. And when we got ready to make the decision, I said to her, well, hey, let's go back to St. Louis. She said, absolutely not. I said, well, why not? She said, I've been in St. Louis for more than a year, and I haven't seen more than two black men with ties on downtown. It was an awakening for me because I just thought that that was the way it was because I was in Boston, and we know that you're not going to see black people with ties. And I had visited Atlanta during our courtship, and I said, absolutely, let's go back to Atlanta.
Okay. So, mm-hmm. With that, you're the number what I understand, the number three man in a 2,300-person firm.
I serve as co-president of the firm.
Co-president.
We don't talk about number ones, number twos, number threes, number four. There is a core leadership team of four core people. I'm part of that core. And then we have other people who play a day-to-day role on various things. But as it relates to strategy, as it relates to revenue generation, as it relates to profitability issues, geographical things, I play a day-to-day role in all those things. But certainly, I'm part of the core leadership team, which is a team of four people.
So you talked about an entrepreneurial beginning, mm-hmm. and now you're in a much larger firm. Mm-hmm. So talk about the platform here. What does that do for your ability to be involved with community service?
So let me just say this real fast. So I was at Minkin & Snyder, and I went to David Minkin one day, and I said, hey, David, I hate this because you guys have been so good to me, but I'm going to have to leave the firm. He says, why? I said, because I think that my practice and my opportunities are outgrowing our platform. What do I mean? We didn't have securities lawyers. We really didn't have labor and employment lawyers. And, you know, I was starting to get ticks in that area. And he said, let me tell you something. He said, a lot of people don't know this. Very few people know this. But we are in discussions with Greenberg Traurig and Paul Hastings. And I went online and I saw this guy named Cesar Alvarez. Cesar Alvarez was the first and to this day the only Cuban or Hispanic leader of a AmLaw 100, AmLaw 50, maybe AmLaw 200. That's American lawyer, 200 largest firm. And I said to myself, this guy is running this firm?
Yeah.
And I think subconsciously in my mind, I felt and saw opportunity. So we end up going with Greenberg Traurig, thank God. And Greenberg Traurig is just a bigger extension of Minkin & Snyder. We are an entrepreneurial firm. We are, you know, one of our campaigns is Big Law Redefined. We don't want to be a stuffy law firm. We don't want to be a law firm that says that, well, this is the way we've done it for 130 years. We want to be dynamic. We want to bring value and solutions to the marketplace, things that people have yet to bring. We are very focused on not following anybody. We are very focused on solving our problems and figuring out solutions internally and not going and hiring expensive consulting firms who have no experience in practicing law. And we're very focused on giving people a platform. In essence, yeah. What we are, and I say this, and I'm a absolute reflection of it, if you can dream it, you can achieve it. And so the good news was that I moved to a firm that's a bigger extension of us. But keep this in mind, too. When I moved to Greenberg Traurig, we had 400 lawyers. And in that time, and it may have been a little more, may have been a little less, we have now grown to this. The real effort is, you know, it's really driven by the individuals. And so we're really focused on individual development, individual plans, individual dreams. That's the focus. So it's the same thing, just on a much larger scale.
Yeah, football player still competing, huh?
Still competing.
Building a team.
Yeah, and coaching.
And coaching, that's right. And so with that, mm-hmm. let's turn to some of your community and philanthropic
yep.
interests. I mean, mm-hmm. you're out there. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had big conversations in the nation over the last year around mm-hmm. social justice, mm-hmm. racial justice, economic justice. Diversity has become something of a buzzword. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to you?
It means to me absolute freedom, and it means to me what's most important to me is that we can talk about all diversity, equity, inclusion as we want to, yeah. but what we really need to be talking about opportunity. That's all black and brown people want.
That's
I mean,
right.
look, we want to make money. We want to make that money. We want that big house on the hill. We want to be able to travel with our families and all that, but we want to earn it. And, you know, the problem has been lack of opportunity in
That's
institutions.
That's right.
And I've been on this for years. You know, I see a lot of law firms who are doing press releases and they're giving money, but I haven't seen those law firms prior to George Floyd doing this.
Yeah,
this is something, and again, that issue. You know, this is a firm that was founded in 1967 by three white men who were Jewish,
right.
who were not allowed to be hired. Traditional law firms would not hire them. Now, they are white Jewish men, and I'm a black man, but they felt the sting of discrimination. They felt the sting of lack of inclusion. And that has been a core issue in this firm. And we talk about it every time we get together as it relates to either a leadership team or as it relates to a convening of our shareholders and the like. We were not invited to this party. And one thing we're not going to do, okay, we are not going to exclude or we're not going to give a lack of inclusion because we understand that sting and we were built on that sting. And that is for me, a great unequalizer. And so, look, when you get to be 2,300 lawyers, you know, it becomes more difficult. Yeah. But what I do every day, without fail, is try to identify people or identify circumstances or structural impairments that impacts people's ability to have opportunity. And that goes across the board.
Across the board.
Okay? Because quite frankly, you know, we know, at least I know, that there are white men who have grown up in society. They've grown up poor. You know, they've grown up in very humble beginnings like me. And they too are fighting for opportunity. And so DE&I, you know, I just hope that people stay focused on it.
Yes,
and that we see that more opportunities created for people of color and for women and other diverse groups so that they can have a piece of the American dream.
You just received the Herman J. Russell CEO of the Year Award from the Atlanta Business League.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand Mr. Russell was a client of yours.
Yes.
Tell me about that relationship and how he has impacted your life.
Great man.
Mm-hmm.
I had the pleasure of doing something that very few people could do. And that was that I would get a call from Mr. Russell, I get a call from the CFO, and Mr. Russell wanted to know what was going on in his case, okay, or his cases. And a kind gentleman, never critical of the work, showed absolute appreciation for the work. But a lot of times, being successful as Mr. Russell was successful, he had to deal with stuff that was, you know, BS, and it was irritating. But I would go over there probably once a month. He had a great office there, and I would sit on the couch when he had a stack of checks that high that was paying vendors. And Mr. Russell was old school. He saw every check. You know, now, you know, we just, you know, it's all electronic and whatever.
Yeah.
Mr. Russell saw every dollar. And we would just sit and talk. And we would talk about the cases. We would talk about other things. We'd talk about family. You know, we would talk about it. And it was an honor. You know, I will tell you, again, I've been blessed. But Mr. Russell had a burden that he handled in a way that I've been able to learn from. I feel a certain burden. I get all communities calling me. I get the Asian community calling me after this shooting. I get the white business community. I get the black community. I get the Jewish community because I've always served a role in it. And Mr. Russell taught me how to do it with grace. Okay, how to say no, how to contribute, but contribute in a way that you can add value. As opposed to being in a way that because you have success, et cetera, that you're at the point. Mr. Russell taught me how to bring other people forward so that the landscape shows much better than what it shows as an individual. You know, Mr. Russell taught me, you know, how to be patient, that there could be a problem. It's an issue, but don't react. Let it play out. And so, you know, it's incredible on a couple of fronts. The Atlanta Business League would be honoring me, particularly in this time when we are dealing with issues that the Atlanta Business League has been dealing with since its founding.
That's right.
Okay?
That's
right. And that I happen to find myself in Atlanta, which I think is the best land for blacks in this country, and that we're so far behind, okay? And, you know, quite frankly, that I would be receiving an award name in honor of Mr. Russell. So it is really an amazing experience for me. You know, it is something that I need these kinds of these kinds of things to give me the energy to keep fighting, because I see it as my peers, you know, my brothers and my sisters in this journey as saying, hey, man, keep going at it. We see what you're doing, and we're behind you. And it gives me great comfort, and it's absolutely a blessing.
This is ABL Duos, where two Black business professionals from Atlanta, Georgia, share opinions and experiences about one topic.
As former chair of the Atlanta Business League, CIRM founder Albert Edwards interviewed the Atlanta Business League's Herman J. Russell CEO of the Year in 2021 and 2022. You just heard him talk to Ernest Greer from Greenberg Traurig. Next, he spends time with another outstanding leader, Christopher Womack, the chairman, president, and CEO of Georgia Power.
Congratulations, sir.
Thank you very much.
Chris, tell us about some of the challenges that shape your character and your work ethic.
Life is it's a fascinating experience. And I was talking with some others earlier, and we were talking about the coincidences of life. And I mean, they're not coincidences. That's how our faith plays things out. And so you have to, I think, acknowledge that and appreciate it because of all the wonderful things that have happened to us when you had no idea, one, first of all, they were possible and what was doable. I mean, I grew up in rural South Alabama in the late 50s and went through the 60s and didn't think there were many opportunities for a young Black kid in South Alabama to do much of anything. I thought I could be a preacher or a teacher. I didn't see other opportunities that were necessarily available to me. I didn't have role models. And so I did have my grandmother always said, my grandmother didn't have a high school education, but she said, you can be whatever you wanted to be. And I wasn't always sure about what that was. But I was never afraid to take a risk. But the other thing she always said to me was, treat people the way you want to be treated. And so if you listen, and like I said, just listen to this stuff today, because, I mean, Ms. King was from Alabama, and I still have this incredible love for Alabama. And so anybody from Alabama, there was this incredible connectivity with it. She and I established a wonderful relationship. So when she knew I was coming to Atlanta, I mean, she did this reception for me. She was the most gracious lady that I've ever known. But it kind of speaks to the greater story of how you treat people and the connectivity that you have with people, not just because of their position, but because you like them and you care about them. I mean, I didn't know Derek Schiller was going to be where he is with the Braves, but when I first met Schiller, he was always Schiller, and he and I always had a blast together. I mean, he was like 7'2", and here I am, my height, but we always kind of hugged and connected. I'm grabbing him around his waist, but we always felt connected. I mean, Andrew Saltzman, you know, with the Hawks and all the things he's done around town, he and I have always been brothers in the struggle. And Jamie McCurry with the Ports Authority, and just so many cats, and the Ewings and John Carter and Johnny Howes and just so many folks that I've always had this incredible connectivity with. And then, I mean, my brothers and sisters here at Georgia Power Company, y'all please stand up, because, I mean, I stand throughout Southern Company as well. I mean, and this is who I get to do what I do with, and we have a lot of fun doing it. I mean, I'm glad we had the commercial, so that I didn't have to do that in terms of give you a commercial about the company and how wonderful it is and all the great and wonderful things that we're doing. We're going to have electric vehicles all across this state, and you're going to have, I mean, there's going to be lightning going everywhere. I mean, this is going to be, we got an incredible bright future. And the last thing I'll say before I go back to your question. I failed, I made mistakes, but I learned from them. I never gave up. And guess what else? God never gave up on me, and I never give up on God. Okay?
Amen.
And so, you know, I mean, I stand hard on my faith. I stand hard on it every day. Most and most of the moments throughout the day, I'm standing hard on it because I know my faith ain't going to never let me down. So, all right, back to you, whichever way you want to go.
I think you covered the first part of that about where you're from.
Let me do one more thing.
Okay,
let me
do one more thing.
Let me do
go
one
ahead,
more
Mr.
thing.
Chairman.
I promise
one more thing.
George Floyd would have died 2 years ago tomorrow, would have been killed. Okay? Atlanta Business League, you see it in the book, 1933, and its affiliation with all that Booker T. Washington thought about in terms of self-sufficiency and the black community lifting itself up, in terms of to aspire to do all the great and wonderful things that we're doing. And so we've been at this journey for a long time. We have. One of the things that I challenge us inside of our company, I do think we're at a moment in time where the door is wide open and we've got to make sure we don't miss this opportunity. Okay? So all of us, in terms of our commitment beyond the PR slogans, beyond the dinners and luncheons, which are very good and we got to do them, but we got to make sure that in this moment in time, that the doors are open, wide open, and we've got to make sure that we seize this moment to make a real difference. A quote I speak to a lot these days is Denzel Washington was giving a graduation speech, and he said, "Don't just aspire to make a living, aspire to make a difference." Okay? And you say, what does a difference mean? First of all, it means helping somebody else out. The most selfless thing you can do is to help somebody, okay? And all that we have, all that we've been given, all that we have been blessed to experience, we have got to make sure that we use that opportunity to share it with somebody else. And black business development ain't a charity, okay?
That's right.
It ain't a charity. It's not a charity. It's an economic partnership that supports your business growth and development and the future of your business enterprise. They are strong partners that can help you through your supply chain challenges, to support you in your sales challenges, support you in whatever you need to be. But we got to take this moment, we got to seize this opportunity and be fully committed and make sure we take it very, very seriously. Okay, I'm going to try to.
That's perfect.
Okay.
So with that commitment to black business, what do you think the role of black business, minority business is on community development?
Yeah, I mean, there's an obligation that goes both ways. And I can't remember who I was talking to somebody earlier in terms of, you know, we've seen these joint venture deals that have gone down before where one person benefits. We got to move beyond that. It's got to be where, yes, a black business, a minority business, any business has got to make sure they take care of themselves. And because if they're not successful, they can't help anybody. But when you get to that point, you got to say, what do I also do to help somebody? You know, I look at Ryan Wilson and what he's doing and the faith journey that he's stepping out on, you know, with the Gathering Spot. But what that has brought to him, but what he has extended to a lot of others. And so that's the challenge. That's the opportunity that's in front of the black business community, is to make sure that we too, you too, are in fact giving back and looking beyond your own individual financial interests and needs.
Okay. Yeah, with that thought, you recognize your brothers and sisters from Southern Company, Georgia Power. And so I know we just didn't arrive here today.
No.
ABL and Georgia Power has this long-standing mm-hmm. relationship. I was in graduate school, and Jim Davis, mm-hmm. Senior Vice President, Corporate Community Relations, I think. And so Mr. Davis, you know, well-spoken, he's standing there, and all of a sudden, he looked like he was moving into like a football-ready position.
Right.
And I said, well, what's going on? And I looked over to the right, he was facing Hosea Williams, who was the, you know, was an icon, civil rights leader, lieutenant right. to Dr. King. And they were facing off as if they were about to, you know, do that sumo wrestling thing. But it was a great kinship. But I know Mr. Davis was so instrumental in his leadership at Georgia Power. How has his leadership affected, I mean, your role at Georgia Power, and then the many leaders in the C-suite from the African American community?
You always, whatever you accomplish in life, you always got to remember you're standing on somebody else's shoulders. Yeah. I didn't get it by myself. I mean, when I joined this company, there were, Jim was the only black officer in the company at the time when I joined. Yeah. Guess what? We've got 35 African American officers in this company right now. Yeah. And we're not done yet. We're not done yet. And so we got to keep getting better. We got to keep growing. We got to keep thriving. We got to keep helping. We got to keep lifting people up. But we also, you have to remember the past. You got to remember where you came from. And so that's one thing that's, I talk a lot about history. I read a lot of history. And so I think that way I can hopefully not repeat some of the mistakes of the past, but learn from the past and make sure we always do better in terms of the things that we do together and how we challenge each other and how we make sure we're fully invested, fully committed to the work that we're doing. I mean, this is not, like I said, I get frustrated a lot of times with companies and things people do that are just PR and just, I mean, it looks good and feels good and smells good, but the core foundation is not there to really make a difference and it's not sustainable. And I think we're at that moment in time where we really have to use this opportunity, use this moment, use this time to really, really, really make a difference.
Wow. So with all of that, and I understand you're working on a PhD as well in your spare time.
In my spare time.
In your spare time. Yeah. So I know folks want to know, what do you do for fun? What makes you laugh?
Oh, God. I mean, John Carter and I were talking about fishing. I love to fish. I love to hunt big game. I love to sit on the creek bank with a rod and reel and catch brim and then go home and cook it and eat it.
Okay.
I mean, there's nothing better than brim. I mean, and I was telling somebody, I love to cook it nice, firm, and crispy so you can eat the whole thing.
Okay, and you grits with that, you fish and grits.
I don't care. I don't care about the grits. I just want the brim.
Okay, all right.
I don't need any sides.
Very good. Well, okay. Congratulations, sir.
Al, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We want to close by thanking Atlanta Herman J. Russell, CEO of the Year Award recipients for 2022 and 2021, Chris Womack and Ernest Greer, and former ABL Chair Albert Edwards for creating memorable content to share on this podcast. This is a special edition of ABL Duos, not only because you've heard from three outstanding African-American business leaders, but because there's another level of interconnectedness between Chris Womack and Ernest Greer. Greer at one time had his own company, and Chris Womack gave him a contract. That fact shows that access to decision makers can do more than help businesses develop. It can help leaders learn from each other. We should also mention that the current ABL chair, Ryan Wilson, can also join this circle of leadership. He at one time interned for attorney Ernest Greer while earning his law degree from Georgetown University. So the concept to consider when you think about this episode is why finding common ground is important. That's a goal everyone wants to achieve. ABL Duos is produced by the Atlanta Business League in Atlanta, Georgia. The interview with Ernest Greer was recorded by Posey Media at Greenberg Tribe headquarters. The interview with Christopher Womack was recorded live during the ABL 2022 CEO ceremony. Post-production editing is provided by Chase Allen of Marchasco Productions. I do the booking, logging, writing, what have you. I am Marty Covington. Thank you for listening.
This broadcast is part of the Atlanta Business League's official 90th anniversary celebration.